Attention, men. Are you struggling with pornography or some other sexually addictive behavior? Do you feel divided, like you're one person on the outside, but someone entirely different on the inside? Then our Gateway to Freedom Workshop can help you. Hi, I'm Jonathan Daugherty, director of the Gateway to Freedom Workshop. This powerful three-day intensive will help you break the cycle of secrecy, shame, and addiction. The workshop is conducted by experts in the field of sexual addiction recovery. If you are tired of living a double life, then contact us today. The next Gateway to Freedom Workshop is coming up May 16th through the 18th in South Texas. So to find out more or to register, call 1-800-49-PURITY or visit gatewaymen.com. Call 1-800-49-PURITY today.
Radio listeners, it's time for
Pure Sex Radio.
This is the best in mobile talk radio. We exist to train men and educate women in overcoming lust, pornography, and sexual addiction. Your host is author and speaker Jonathan Daugherty, director of Be Broken Ministries. Today's broadcast, Healing Hidden Wounds with Lee Preston, focuses on helping individuals who struggle with unwanted same-sex attraction. Lee Preston is the founder of Shadow of His Wings Ministry. And now, please welcome Jonathan and Lee on Pure Sex Radio.
Good day, radio listeners. Welcome to this week's edition of the Pure Sex Radio broadcast. We're really excited to have you here with us. This week, we are going to be doing our Healing Hidden Wounds segment, and this is where we really try to focus in on helping those who are struggling with unwanted same-sex attraction. I'm here with my co-host, Lee Preston. Hey, Lee, how you doing?
Good, Jonathan.
Excellent. Well, we are going to dive right into something that is has the potential to affect our legal system, has the potential to affect marriages, has the potential to affect any single Christian-based nonprofit organization in the United States. And why don't you tell us what this is that is so wide-sweeping that might be coming up just in the next few months or even next year?
Well, Jonathan, you know, recently we sent out a little newsletter talking about some information that NARTH recently came out with. And NARTH, just for those listening, is National Association for the Research and Treatment of Homosexuality. And they came out with some interesting information about what the American Psychological Association is looking at right now. And that is determining that treatment of homosexuality could be at some point considered unethical. And they have set up some groups looking at this decision and their determination of ultimately making that decision that says that even looking at or even attempting to treat homosexuality could be considered unethical.
And what is their premise for even considering such a claim? I mean, what is the premise? I mean, are they just saying just because we think so, or what's the argument that they're making to therefore say that if you treated someone who has homosexual feelings, even if they want that treatment, that it could somehow be seen as unethical to treat them?
Well, they're almost, in my opinion, looking at it as how do you treat something that's biological? And I think they've determined that because they're listening to the research that is determined that it's a biological situation rather than a nurturing situation or an upbringing situation, then they've determined that it's unethical to try to treat someone and try to prevent them from being the way they were born.
So now, is there actually scientific evidence that proves there's a biological gene, some sort of genetic code in the homosexual that is unique or different from anyone else?
Well, short of having probably an inundation of different folks calling in saying that, yes, there is, mostly what you see right now is sketchy and sometimes less than consistent or reliable research that shows that there's a biological component. I think what we can determine is that it's a lot like most of the initial illnesses, addictions that were in the beginning stages that people began looking at, saying, oh, well, that must be genetic, or there must be a genetic component to that. I think anything you can ultimately find genetic components to if you look hard enough, but that doesn't necessarily mean that here there's any proof that it's a biological disorder.
You know, the thought I had in my mind right as you were saying that was, do you think this could take on the same flavor and progression that the whole argument of evolution took?
Certainly.
I mean, in terms of there being this theory, in essence, that has multiple time gaps, multiple even scientific gaps that are just kind of explained away and put on the back shelf and not actually looked at from an intelligent standpoint, but then through lobbyists and politics and all those sorts of mechanisms becomes the standard for education, or becomes the standard for the history of man.
Right. I agree. I think it's because it becomes the standard. I think it's because you have a large lobbying group that's very intelligent, very creative, and very organized.
Very persuasive.
Very persuasive, who are attempting to prove their point. Because, you know, I was there. I lived in that life. And there comes a point where you have to either determine, one, that you were born this way, and that's why you can't change, or that, wow, I'm in for a pretty rocky road in trying to change. Because, let's be honest, it is a tough road to go to try to change, because it's so deeply embedded in one's identity. But once you begin to see the change, that's easier. But you either have to choose choice, or you have to choose that I was born that way. And when we have this huge lobbying group who is choosing that they were born that way, then they're going to try to shift the tide to try to persuade all of us that they were born that way. And then there will be research to back that up. Mm-hmm. It's not really that we're backing up the research with truth. We're backing up the persuasion with research to attempt to try to back
sure.
it up.
Sure. And anybody with anybody who's been around in our culture long enough knows that numbers can be swayed to whatever persuasion you need them to be swayed to.
Most
statistics,
definitely.
Research. You can find, if you look long enough, you can find somebody who's going to tell you what you want to hear.
Most definitely.
And maybe even put it in a report.
Most definitely, because I want it to be proven that I was born this way. So go out and interview, you know, such and such number of folks, get their determination. We'll look at brain waves. And, you know, I won't argue that perhaps brain functioning,
brain activity may look different.
May look different.
But it also looks different in a cocaine addict.
Exactly.
It also looks different in somebody who was born with Down syndrome. It looks different. You know, so there's, we can't simply look to some of those things and therefore make a definitive conclusion that because there is this particular pattern of brain activity in somebody who has homosexual tendencies versus someone who does not, that therefore that conclusively proves that it's a that they were born that way. Because usually if you look at, I mean, how many studies, and I'm going to claim ignorance on this, but how many studies are being done right now on 1-year-olds, 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds in terms of brain activity to determine, or anything like that, that's going to determine, because my guess is, don't they want to basically come back and say, hey, we can look at the brain activity of a 1-year-old and say that kid's going to be gay?
Sure. And I think there are probably zero studies out there on 1-year-olds, 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds, because the studies aren't done until the person determines that he or she is gay, which is usually past adolescence. They may have those feelings prior to, but the studies aren't going to happen until post that. But what we have to remember is that the identity is so intertwined in this sin, in this identity issue, that because a kid may act a certain way, it's like we were talking about, if you drive over a pasture field long enough, you will ultimately make ruts in a pasture where a road will begin to form. Mm-hmm. If my brain functions in a way that I begin to think a certain way over and over, then the pathways of that brain will ultimately be formed to where it will function differently.
Right.
If I see myself as more feminine than I do masculine, I will, and I believe that, I will begin to think that way. I will begin to identify as female.
And ultimately behave that way.
And ultimately behave, walk, talk, act as a female. Or as a gay male. Or as a gay female. If it's a female, the brain functioning begins to follow where we go.
Mm-hmm. Now back to this whole American Psychological Association thing. If their board or however they make their decisions concerning these things, if they come down and make a decision and say any organization, you know, if they actually say that, okay, we're gonna agree with the gay lobbying group that is trying to tell us, listen, it's a biological issue, therefore we are we have certain rights because we were born this way. What do you see the ramifications of such a ruling? I mean, by the American Psychological Association, what do you see as the fallout or the what are the ramifications if that is true, where they're basically going to say then that means any treatment of anybody who is homosexual, whether they want to change or not, is now unethical?
Well, I think that's the importance of taking, you know, we can discuss genetics and the origin, but even if we take that out, even if we're not sure what we see about that yet, if a person comes in and says, you know what, I don't believe that I was born this way, or if I was, I don't care, I'd like to try to get help for it because I want to try and change, then they should have that choice to be able to do that. And unfortunately, what this is doing is it's removing that choice for any of those folks who might say, you know what, this isn't what I want.
It's like it's removing the choice for the person who's having the feelings and doesn't want the feelings. And it's also removing the choice for those who want to help those with those homosexual feelings, right? I mean, it's removing choice on both sides.
Most definitely. And it's what it's even doing is you take even a teenager who's not sure, who just is in that confusion place of, you know what, I've had some feelings towards the folks of the same sex, but I'm not sure, and yet we as helping professionals can look at that situation and see some of the typical traits where dad's either absent or not around or distant.
Or mom is overbearing.
Or mom is right. Over-involved, over-connected with her child. If it's a male, if it's a female, it's just the opposite generally. But you start to see some of the same traits, then you can't really step in. A helping person can't step in and say, well, let me help you see how to change this situation, how to provide some different situations for this kid so that perhaps he or she can make a choice about how they truly feel. Because our feelings are responding to the surroundings that we're in this particular situation. I mean, what's happening is you've got a kid who's responding to his or her situation. His identity is changing because of what he sees and hears around him or her every day. And if you can change that, which is coming up probably in another segment about prevention of homosexuality, mm-hmm. but if you can change that, then you can see hope there. A kid can start to change, can start to do things differently, can start to hang out with more of friends of the same sex, or can start to find attraction somewhere along the line to the opposite sex. But if there's no offering of that, if we're not capable of doing that because it's considered unethical, then you start this small spark inflamed into a fire, then it ends up destroying and burning down an entire forest, because then we've got folks who can never get healing and must then choose the homosexual lifestyle.
It's the only choice they'd be given.
It's the only choice they're offered.
It's either go full bore into the homosexual lifestyle or just continue to limp along, trying to be, you know, and then they're kind of left in limbo land. They're in no man's land where maybe they don't want to fully embrace the lifestyle, but they don't have anywhere to go to get help for it. Now, if you took out, I mean, tell me what you think the ramifications are. Let's take the moral component out of it. I mean, you and I, as believers, as Christians, we believe that homosexuality is a sin. Doesn't mean that we hate homosexuals at all, but we believe it's a sin. So therefore, we think it does have a moral component. But let's say for a minute we just remove that. Let's make it just what it seems to be, at least with the APA and with the lobbyists. It's a kind of a legal thing right now. Purely on a legal level, what do you see the ramifications to marriage, to our culture, from a legal standpoint, if this sort of idea is passed, if this sort of ruling is made?
Well, we're opening a door to treat other behaviors that have once been considered detrimental to our society as now perfectly legal.
Like what?
Pedophilia. Could be, you know, even...
Explain that. How on earth could pedophilia then be seen as... I mean, why did you immediately go there?
Well, along this continuum, I mean, if you look at the sexual deviant continuum, I mean, homosexuality falls in there somewhere. And there is currently an organization out there called NAMBLA, National Association of Man-Boy Love, and they're already proposing that boys should be exposed to homosexuality and that they should be almost offered homosexuality.
Based on the same argument that the homosexual agenda is making, right? That we were born this way.
Yes, because we were born this way, and if we're born this way, then we should offer this training, just like a father would train his son to... You know, look for the right woman. This is a homosexual male training up his son or a male child in how to look for the right male partner and how to enjoy homosexual sex at a very young age. And as you begin to look at that picture, then what could potentially happen next is the pedophile who's attracted to female children could say, well, you know what, what's the difference, you know? So I'm attracted to 13-year-olds, and I'm a 36-year-old man. We're already seeing some of those boundaries starting mm-hmm. to shift in our legal system, where a 30-year-old man is caught in having sexual relationships with a 17-year-old. We're already tending to turn our heads, mm-hmm. even in situations where they're 16 and even 15. So
then you could also even see, I mean, the thing that popped into my head is you could also then see the door opening for those who practice polygamy.
Exactly.
It's like it would immediately attack the institution of marriage, traditional marriage. And obviously we've already seen that in terms of the homosexual movement attacking the institution of marriage. But this, what I think is so dangerous about this particular ruling is that then it opens up the door for lots of other sorts of behaviors. Polygamy, pedophilia, you know. And you could almost, if you wanted to take it to some absurd extreme, you could take it to any group of people with some sort of common behavior or preference, you know, pulling together a few reports that say, you know, we think we're born this way. And so therefore we need to have the same rights as these groups, as the homosexuals, and really what this ultimately does, don't you think, is it places homosexuals in the exact same category as a minority.
Oh, most definitely.
And so then they're going to say we want the same rights as a minority.
Yes, I think the gay agenda is to be a protected category, a category who deserves special accommodation for their sexuality, not necessarily their ethnicity or the color of their skin, but because of their sexuality.
Mm-hmm. Because, see, I have a kind of the way I look at things is I say, listen, I am all for equal rights. Totally. I believe that, you know, this country especially was founded on life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I believe we were all created equal in God's eyes. And so I'm all for the equal rights thing. But I think when you start making rights based on preferences rather than real minority inequality, then I think, boy, you just open up Pandora's box in terms of it's almost like there's just be a mad grab for whatever people could get in terms of I'm a polygamist. I want to have 14 wives. And, oh, and by the way, I'm a polygamist and a pedophile, so I want my fifth wife to be 12 years old.
Well, and you're right. And to take the, to even if we now bring our Christianity and our moral foundation back into this conversation, ultimately, then we lose the opportunity to ever help the struggling homosexual to find freedom in Christ, because now there is no option to do that. And if we don't look at that now, churches will begin to see that even their message from the pulpit will be censored to determine whether or not they're practicing good ethical.
So now what you're saying is you think, and I think you can speak as somebody with authority on this because you've been in that lifestyle. So what I'm hearing you say is you think that this whole movement by the gay lobbyists is not merely for equal rights. It's actually to bring down those who oppose homosexuality.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I was listening when you were speaking earlier about that homosexual male who or female who wants to come and they can't come to a therapist or they can't find someone to help them, so they pretty much just have to choose the homosexual lifestyle. Well, isn't that exactly the way it was not so many years ago when the struggling homosexual was trying to find help to accept his or her homosexuality? And they went out looking for a therapist, and they were all saying how, well, you weren't born that way. It is an illness. And they had to ultimately accept that they weren't really gay, and they had to go try to find help to try to change that. So really what we're doing now, or what this ruling could do, is prevent those who want to change from changing, just as when the others were saying they couldn't accept their homosexuality back then because there was no one to help them. And yes, I think ultimately what the gay agenda is looking at is to say, not only do we want equal rights, we don't want you to be able to speak against healing the homosexual. I mean, we don't want you to speak against homosexuality as being an inborn trait ever, because then that goes against what we fought to try to make everyone believe. And so ultimately, our belief as a church, as a body of Christ, begins to crumble because we can't speak truth anymore from the pulpit without persecution.
You almost wonder if it's a bait-and-switch sort of thing, whereas as they are lobbying the APA and they're lobbying legislators, they are taking on the stance of a victim. You know, hey, listen, we're an oppressed people because we're a minority, and we want to be able to have equal rights as those who are traditionally married as a man and a woman. We want to have those same rights, and they're fighting for that. And you almost get the feeling that if they get that, then the hammer comes down and it's, hey, carte blanche. Now we can not only just, we've got our victim status, so now we can go on the offensive and we can start attacking these groups, these churches, these ministries who are trying to help those who actually don't want their homosexual feelings. And see, that's really, when we talk about this program, Lee, we are not, this program is not for the quote unquote happy homosexual.
Right.
You know what? This is not who it's for. We make it clear, actually, in our little subline to the Healing Hidden Wounds. Help for those who have unwanted same-sex attraction. It's for those who actually want help because they say, I don't want these feelings. And what I get the feeling is that if the gay lobbyists get this on the books in terms of it being unethical for any group to help someone who says they have homosexual feelings and they don't want those feelings, then we would now be under some legal threat from activist homosexual organizations who say you cannot help because it's a law now. It'd be unethical for you to treat that person.
Well, and I think we have to, I mean, I just want to acknowledge that we're not here to even continue to say that we don't understand that even the happy homosexual may want this freedom. Mm-hmm. I acknowledge that. They may want this freedom, and I can acknowledge that. And I met and I was friends with and still are friends with, still am friends with many folks who have cried saying, I want to be able to have children. I want to be able to get married. Mm-hmm. And I acknowledge all of those things. But we do want to keep saying that it isn't God's best. And that is the message. And if we don't, as the church even, don't, if we don't start looking at this, this decision to make this an unethical dilemma, if you do try to provide treatment for the homosexual, whether they're happy or struggling, because many of the happy ones were also struggling.
Sure.
Then we end up losing even the battle of telling the truth in the pulpit. And so there really will never be truth then. And those who are looking to try to change, or those who even don't know they can change, don't know that there's even change options out there, will never hear those again. And if the church doesn't rise up and do something about that, they will lose their ability, and then we truly will be unable to speak out when someone really does want healing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, the good news is there's still hope now.
That's right.
And folks can get help now. And we're going to have to wrap up the broadcast at that point. Thank you for being here with us today on the Pure Sex Radio broadcast. We'll see you back here again next week.
Today's Purity Pointer, making a point that makes a difference. Brought to you by Pure Sex Radio.
Ask permission. 1 Corinthians 6 tells us to flee from sexual immorality. And then later it says, because you are not your own, you were bought at a price. Therefore, honor God with your body. Do you view your body as God's property? If you are a believer in Christ, then you do not have the right to do whatever you wish with your body. This includes your sexuality. If you want to live a life of sexual purity that is pleasing to God, begin today to view your body as a rental. Any decision you make with your eyes, your mind, or your sexuality must first pass the approval of your Savior.
Purity Pointer is a service of Pure Sex Radio. Listen to more Purity Pointers at PureSexRadio.com.
Thanks for listening to today's broadcast. We want to hear from you. This broadcast is not possible without the prayers and financial contributions of listeners like you. Please send your notes and donations to Pure Sex Radio, 1800 Northeast Loop 410, Suite 415, San Antonio, Texas, 78217. Again, the mailing address is 1800 Northeast Loop 410, Suite 415, San Antonio, Texas, 78217. You may also reach us by phone toll-free at 1-800-49-PURITY. Our toll-free number again is 1-800-497-8748. Our website is a great resource for archived broadcasts, helpful resources, and secure donations. Simply visit www.puresexradio.com for more information. That wraps up our time together on this week's Pure Sex Radio broadcast. We look forward to having you back next time when we again tackle real-life struggles with lust, porn, and sex addiction. Until then, remember, the price you pay today for purity is a bargain compared to the pain it costs if you put it off.
Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries.